Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 101. That's right, we're in the triple digits, 101 of the Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I am your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and my guest today is the amazing, incredible Jeremy Fuxa. Jeremy is a designer originally from Hennessy, Oklahoma. You probably know him as the host of The Shakes on Mule Radio Syndicate. He began life as a broadcast engineer, director, and producer at a low-power UHF station before nosing his way into the ad industry in 1999. And since then, Jeremy's work has won multiple local, regional, and national Addy Awards. So we'll be talking, among other things, about advertising on the web and advertising in the web and all that lovely stuff. But speaking of advertising, I'd like to thank a sponsor here before we get into it. HostGator. That's right, friends. HostGator is the best place to get a website. They offer premium web hosting at low costs. HostGator offers 24/7/365-day-a-year phone, chat, and email support. Offers hosting for any size site with shared VPS and dedicated servers. They can move your site for you if you want to transfer it to them. Do you need a website for your next killer startup idea or cat blog? HostGator has you covered. HostGator.com offers a premium web hosting at low prices. While you're there, grab a .net. Getting a short, memorable domain name can be a challenge, but .net has lots of great options available, and .net is the best way to get a killer domain name that's not 180 characters. Hey, if your site explodes getting internet famous, HostGator still has you covered with VPS and dedicated servers. Have a website somewhere else and not happy? HostGator will move it for you. They do all the hard work. Head over to HostGator.com, buy some hosting, get some .NETs, and use coupon code WEB. That's coupon code WEB to get an extra 25% off and support the Big Web Show. We want your support. HostGator wants your support. So go to HostGator and use WEB as your code for a big, fat discount. And with no further ado, there is my handsome guest. You can't see him, but I can. Jeremy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well, Jeffrey. Thank you for having me on the show.
Where are you today? You're not in Hennessy anymore.
No. I am in Kansas City, hanging out in the conference room of the shared workspace that my company utilizes.
You do your internet radio broadcasting from that place?
Yes. Actually, on The Shakes, we mention your mom's basement. It always comes from your mom's basement. So basically what you see behind me is your mom's basement.
It looks kind of hotelish.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It kind of looks like I could be at a Hilton.
I was going to say an airport Hilton.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely the airport Hilton. Not one of the nice high-rise ones.
And no offense, and we love airport Hiltons.
Oh, sure. Spend a lot of time at airport Hiltons, actually.
When you can't get your plane, have you ever flown out of Richmond?
No.
Richmond, Virginia is famous for it, apparently, as I learned during business trips there. They cancel your flight, but they don't really let you know. So you race to the airport, you go through the TSA, you get like 7 kinds of cancer through the screening. Mm-hmm. You show up and it's canceled and there's nobody there explaining anything. And basically you have to go to a airport Ramada or Hilton or something like that. And you're very glad it exists.
Yeah. Now I get that in Chicago a lot, but not
really because of the weather. Yeah.
Yes. Usually because of the weather. Yeah. The last 2 times that I've gone through Chicago, I've ended up staying some extra. Well, as a matter of fact, when coming home from an event apart Boston, I stayed an extra night in Chicago because there was a thunderstorm that had come through. So, yep.
I moved someplace where I never have to transfer. That's my goal in life. I really don't want much. I don't ask for much out of life, but not having to change planes is one thing that I desperately.
You're a simple man, Jeffrey. Very simple.
I am a simple man. Yeah. Simple. I, like you, was in advertising, which is not a simple place by any stretch of the imagination. And you're still in advertising, I believe.
Yes. I'm kind of more on the fringes of it now, getting more just into pure client services for the web. But I have spent quite a bit of time in the advertising agency trenches, that's for sure.
Ad people kind of look down on other ad people who do web stuff, almost like those web people are inferior somehow. That was my impression the last time I looked around advertising. I could be wrong now, but.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that, because I think there might be an undercurrent of that still. But at the same time, they also know that the web folks in an advertising agency are so incredibly valuable to them at this point that it's certainly not that they put them on a pedestal or anything like that. But now they're more kind of like the magic gnomes that just make things happen for the rest
where,
of the campaign.
Where are the agency billings coming from? Are they still coming from traditional media buys?
Well, you know, depending on the agency, yes, a lot of the billing is going to come from media, and you know, the markup that they get from that, and increasingly now those media budgets, as far as I know, because you know, I've never been really deep into the media side of things, but you know, online spend is increasing. So you know, as you were saying about advertising on the internet, I think for the most part the internet is just advertising anymore, or at least it feels like that. And that's largely due in part of, you know, everybody has to be on the web, everybody has to have a social play, and so digital has now become such a it's definitely supplanted print in a lot of ways, and a lot of non-traditional stuff is kind of where they're going, and that's where the bread and butter comes from.
Help me understand something, because well, recently I had to judge an advertising award show, and it was the interactive side. Mm-hmm. They brought a bunch of us people who do that, but there was only one website in that whole bunch that I would consider interactive, and mm-hmm. I gave it high marks, because not, you know, in part just because that was an actual website.
Sure.
A lot of what we were looking at was TV commercials that were embedded and things like mm-hmm. that, and we were judging campaigns based on like what clever TV commercials they were, which didn't seem to me the proper that a group of so-called interactive judges should be honoring that. They were brilliant commercials, but I believe there are already award shows for those commercials, not
exactly.
And those people are already getting plenty of awards, plenty of recognition, plenty of money. Shouldn't the people who actually tried to make, I don't know, two-way websites be getting some mm-hmm. recognition?
No, I absolutely agree.
And I was told by the person running the thing, well, we discussed that 10 years ago, and we decided that it's, you know, if it appears on the web, it's interactive.
And I'm like, oh.
You know, I was like, oh, well, 10 years ago, well. And you decided.
Yeah.
You guys discussed that 10 years ago, so then there's nothing to talk about. Yeah, so
exactly.
I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think that's one of the things that I mentioned to you when you and I started talking about this topic, to have me come on and talk about it, was that even though we've made such great leaps in technology, our platforms are more varied than ever, we've got so much at our disposal interactively to use and could potentially use in a very effective way for advertising or any sort of communication, it
right.
still feels like everything is still stuck 10, 15 years ago. It's still that idea of it's all basically a billboard. And I'm not sure why we're still stuck on that. Because I know that having been in advertising agencies as an interactive designer, having lots of friends and colleagues who are that, there are a lot of brilliant interactive people there who do know the medium and know how to use that effectively. And I just think it still comes to that whole idea of marketing. People will sometimes look around, they see what competitors do, and they say, I want that. I want this too. And so they definitely want good work, but I'm trying to think. There was some university that did some sort of a psychological study that just says that creative ideas, even though everybody values creativity, just the idea of really novel and creative ideas tends to make people a little bit physically ill. And so, you know, when you're presented with an idea that really presses your boundaries of maybe where you think your brand should go or your idea, as much as you might want to like it, there's that feeling in the pit of your stomach. And I think that people who tend to be on the creative and the making side of the things, you tend to thrive on that. But for somebody else whose millions of dollars are on the line, that sick feeling is a sign that maybe we should steer away from that. And I think that's a big part of it.
Well, yeah, they say every client wants something completely new and different that's been proven at least three times before.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And that is why, as little as, oh, I don't know, 6 years ago, I was still making these flash micro sites that basically were just animated billboards, really.
What are you making now?
Now I'm making mobile applications and websites that are animated billboards.
And like no, what?
I'm reductive. I'm reductive. Right now I am actually working toward making things that are interactive that do have some utility. And that's one of the things that really frustrated me with the advertising industry was that I get really tired of making those interactive billboards. And so where I am now, I'm at a digital boutique in Kansas City called Click Farm. I'm design director there. And we have clients that do need more utility or educational based interactive products. So for instance, one of the websites that I'm working on is for a think tank at the University of Kansas that is working toward some educational research that shows that integrating a classroom, right now most people, you have the classroom, you have the special ed classroom, and you have maybe the gifted and talented classroom. And so everybody's kind of siloed based on their educational progress and so on and so forth. And they're looking at research that maybe those silos are not necessarily the best idea. Maybe everybody integrates back together and the teachers have tools and methodologies that can help everybody at their own pace, but still everybody still gets the same thing. And so we were charged with doing a website for them. And so right now it looks like a marketing site. It's a long scrolling, almost parallax looking thing. You know, it's got something that feels like it's not an educational thing. But as they start to publish more of their research and gather more data, it's going to become a deeper site. And there's a lot of engagement that of course, they're going to do a lot of writing and blogging. And so it's a lot more complex than it is at this point. But the reason why it kind of looks different is that when you think about that philosophically of what they're trying to prove, you've got a lot of markets that you've got to try to get to buy into this. Not only do you have the superintendent of the district and the teachers, but you also have the families that might have some concerns. It's like, okay, well, you're going to bring the special ed kids into class. Are they going to slow down my child
or vice versa.
On and so forth, or vice versa. And so, there's going to be many levels of information, and so it's a way for them to be able to interact and be able to even get into, if they are going to be a school that's part of that, being able to contact the school board superintendent with questions and so on and so forth. So things that still have a marketing slant, you're trying to sell an idea to somebody, but at least there's some utility to it. And so that's one of the things that I've been working on. I've been working on a mobile app for a hospital that helps for their birth center, that helps expectant mothers with information that they might need in real time based on what trimester they're on, reminding them of doctor's appointments. And so just really moving into things that are branded but actually have a use. And I think that's one thing that still to me feels like 10, 15 years ago, there's still so many branded apps that are just completely pointless. And so, you know, there are like, very, very few people doing it right.
Like download this app that duplicates the weather, but
yes,
like has our beer can on it.
Yep, exactly, exactly. And I think that there, you know, there are very few examples that I can think of like really, really good branded applications that that kind of get that branding and that sales pitch out of the way and let you use it for what it is.
Is there any thought to the experience itself conveying the brand attributes?
I think so.
A tidy experience for a tidy brand, a funny experience for a funny brand. I mean, I'm speaking in very broad strokes, obviously, but
no,
theoretically, that's kind of where the brand, as opposed to, you know, our colors.
Sure.
Our colors and our typeface.
Yeah. And really, that's kind of where I am and where I sit with the process. Even though I do some of the visual design, to me, I wouldn't even call myself a user experience designer, just basically an interaction designer. And so part of that interaction is how are you interacting with the brand? If that brand has a playful feel, then your interactions should be playful or tidy or, you know, any of those things that you're saying. And so, yeah, really, to me, it's my job is how to take that brand story, bring it to life, but bring it to life with the user in mind so that way they can use and get some value out of whatever it is that we're putting up there for them.
Now, who are you pitching to in general? Are you working directly with clients? Or is it your job to sell this to clients?
Yes. I do quite a bit of that. So I will do new business pitches. I do the bulk of the introductory presenting. So I kind of will take the role of user experience designer, and even at the moment, we've got a business analyst starting here next week, but right now, so I'll do a lot of technical director stuff as well. And so do software requirements and so on and so forth. Thankfully, I will get to stop doing some of that because that's my favorite part to do.
When you were at more traditional ad agencies, did you do a lot of presenting to the real creative director who then presented to the client?
Yes. That was usually the way. I did have the occasional, since I was on the senior side of the design team, I had the occasions where I got to go in and do the presentations to the CEO and the board and whoever the stakeholders were for that project. But yeah, by and large, it was really that traditional idea. You go in, you pitch your ideas, whether they are pencil roughs, write-ups, whatever, treatments, and you go through that process. And then the final of whatever that deliverable was going to be was then taken by the group creative director for that project or that brand, and then they would take it out and present.
Do the ideas ever come from the digital department? As opposed to our creative team have this, you know, the people who work on television came up with this campaign, and I guess you direct mail people will have to execute on it somehow, and you web people will have to execute on it somehow. But instead of that, do ideas come from the web team and then percolate up into TV or sideways into TV?
Well, in my experience, and to be fair, I've been out of what I would say the agency business for about almost 2 years now. But yes, in my experience, it was mostly ideas that came from the traditional side. So it's either, like you're saying, that there's a television campaign that needs to have some sort of an interactive tie-in or some sort of thing like that. But there were a few instances where the interactive team would have the idea first and then bring that forward. Let's see, one of the ideas when I was working at Barclay, one of the ideas that started as a pure interactive play was one of our clients was Sonic Drive-In, and they were sponsoring the MTV Music Video Awards, and they had a flash banner along the side of the live video stream that our idea was to tie in and do live commentary inside that banner of what was going on in the video stream right at that exact moment.
Fun.
Yeah. And
did
so
it, work?
It did work. It did work. We had we turned one of our conference rooms into kind of this war room, and everybody sat around and watched the video stream on the projector, and we had an editorial team that was plugged into basically that Flash banner ad. And yes, they were able to comment along with and add commentary with what was going on. And of course it was in the tone of the characters that are in the Sonic drive-in commercials. And so it was basically that. But yes, it was a good execution, and that was something that did come interactive first. And so there are a lot of those types of things that are happening, but I do still think that for the most part there are a lot of traditional ideas that are still driving. You just feel like there needs to be an interactive tack on. So,
well, most of the art directors I know who are still in, I say still like it's a bad thing. I don't mean it that way, but I have some friends who are in advertising and they're traditional art directors, mm-hmm. and all of them are scrambling to learn HTML and
yes,
all the things that we take for granted now. It seems like that's a big shift in the whole industry, and that you're kind of not marketable just as I sit with a writer and come up with ideas. It's like if you can't execute, and if you can't execute on the web, then you're going to have a hard time marketing yourself.
Yeah.
Yep. In your market.
You're spot on. Oh yeah. I think that's just nationwide. And one of the interesting things that I've always thought when I look at these art directors who are trying to make those leaps, and we've often said in our circles, designer's code, good designer's code. And that is true, I believe, but I think apart from learning that code, which is valuable, I can always tell, or at least in the past, when I was working with a traditional team that had a digital idea, they would start doing some designs for the interactive side of it as well. And boy, you could sure tell that they came from a traditional team.
It's kind of like when you look at like the flaws in iOS 7 now,
mm-hmm.
are that it doesn't seem to, that the weaknesses in terms of an interactive experience, it seems like interaction designers were sort of pushed aside, and people with a strong print background or a hardware background
mm-hmm.
had their say. But a lot of things that we, after 20 years of on-screen interaction design, a lot of things that we know were pushed aside. And so there's buttons that don't look like buttons because it's more elegant to have them look like plain text. But I don't know where to click, and I don't, I have to actually read everything and stop and slow down my experience instead of just hitting the big button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I can think of many occasions where the aesthetics were definitely there, but the usability of the design just wasn't quite up to snuff, because
sure.
they didn't have that extra bit of finesse that they were looking for just yet. And so I think that's step one, is just really, if you're trying to get out of a traditional rut and make yourself more marketable as, let's use a Jared Spool's term, as a unicorn. So mm-hmm. if you're trying to make yourself a little more marketable in that, I would say start with studying interaction design and get that finesse part of it down, and then learn how to translate that into code. I think that's probably right. a good way of doing that.
Makes sense. Don't go, I need to learn HTML, or I need to learn SAS, or I need to learn ActionScript, it used to be. But people used to say, it's kind of like the bad design schools that would teach interaction design by teaching people how to use Photoshop and Illustrator. And it's mm-hmm. like, that's cool, but those are nice.
Yeah. The rest of those things I can teach you. I can teach you SAS. I need to just get you into a mode where the interactions and the usability of it is what you're thinking of first.
So I had a friend who would always describe IE as this very handsome salesman with a corpse tied to his back, and an older stinking corpse tied to that guy's back. because you were always stuck with old versions, right? So there'd be IE9 or IE10, bright and shiny and awesome. But, you know, you still had IE8 and IE10, and there was still somebody dealing with IE6. Advertising seems to have problems like that. For example, the whole world has really been turned on by responsive design as a solution, you know, to our multi-device world. The fact that someone starts reading on their desktop, continues reading on their, you know, on their phone, maybe later they're looking at a netbook of some kind. But on the other hand, you have an industry built around these IAB ad formats, which are fixed widths and heights.
Yeah.
It's a print model, right? I mean, it makes sense.
Sure.
In a newspaper, I've got an inch worth of ads cup. You know, I've got an inch worth of newspaper to sell you for this price and 2 inches to sell you for that price. But on the web, in the modern multidimensional web that we're evolving, in the responsive and just fluid web that we're designing for, what do you do with stuff like IAB ad formats? How does how does the industry even keep up? They sell, right? People sell. The client paid for this size. He didn't pay for that size. What do we do?
Yeah.
How do you see that?
That's a great question, and that's one that I don't think I have an answer to. I think that, especially, you know, one of the biggest problems, of course, is that a lot of the banner ads are still flash based, and so I think the introduction of that Google Web Designer tool, which I've downloaded but I haven't played with yet, I don't really know what it's capable of, but being able to kind of turn that into HTML5 and being able to just get Flash out of the equation is going to make that a little easier to go in and make it universally usable. But that idea about the sizes, that is pretty tough, and I think that it's going to have to. Because you're right, it is based on kind of that idea of so much per column inch in back in the newspaper model. I think that they're going to have to possibly use some sort of an idea of kind of screen coverage, maybe. So, you know, you've got that 728 by 90 leaderboard that's a fixed top. So maybe that becomes it's going to be 100% width. And we know that that's going to be the size. So across the different breakpoints and different contexts of screen, you're going to get 100% width coverage of this ad. And I think that's probably, luckily that is not the design problem that I have to solve. But our industry does. And I think that percentages right now is just the best thought, with me just spitballing, throwing something across the wall, with percentages, I think is just going to be the best that, but then again, now that I think about that, that even breaks down when you get into single column layouts. Everything's going to be 100%. So yeah, that's definitely going to be, something that is going to get very, very important within, I would say, the next year. I don't know that somebody's going to get it figured out maybe for another year or two, but I'm sure that the guys at vendors like Point Roll and DoubleClick and all of that, it's got to be something that they've been thinking about, and I really would be interested to see where their heads are at on that. That'd be something interesting to find out.
It just occurred to me that it's almost like you'd want an iframe, and in that iframe you'd have a responsive website, like a responsive web page that was the ad. So that the ad designers had a whole responsive challenge that they'd responded to, and then that became a modular component of it. Hopefully not, doesn't have to be an iframe,
I think that would be a good solution, especially for when you start getting down into single column. Then you can make sure, because if taking that idea of the leaderboard again, once you get down to a single column on a mobile phone, well, that thing's only going to be 20 pixels high by the time it gets there.
Right.
So that's unreadable. So yeah, I think there needs to be some flexibility in there, and that's going to be an interesting model to play out.
There's also, I should point out, there is a company called Responsive Ads, and they're at responsiveads.com.
Well, it might be interesting to see what they've got to say about
Yeah,
that.
Well, they say effectively monetize mobile like desktop and engage your audience better. responsive
shifting the paradigms.
Yes. Well, you know, nobody's figured out a better way to pay for content than advertising.
Right? Absolutely true. That's absolutely true.
The wealthiest individuals can pay for pro versions of everything, and but most people can't. Most people, it's a very good thing to have. Advertising brings you this content. So
yes,
we do need to figure it out. We're going to talk some more in a moment, but first I want to do a little advertising myself and thank Igloo, who is another sponsor of the Big Web Show. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. Big Web Show listeners should go to igloosoftware.com/big so that Igloo knows we sent you. That's igloosoftware.com/big. Now, with Igloo, you can quickly share content with built-in apps, blogs, calendars, files, file sharing forums, Twitter-like microblogs, and wikis. Everything on Igloo is social. You comment on any type of content, at mention your workers, follow content for updates, and use tags to group things around the way you like. You can add on rooms like mini igloos for each of your teams to work in. And it's easy. The whole thing's drag and drop. Features responsive design. There we go. And uses beautiful fonts from Typekit. Hooray! Your Igloo has enterprise-grade security, and you can start using it right away. It's free to use with up to 10 people. Like, so if you have a 9-person company, you can basically use this free forever, which is, I don't even know how they do that. And when your Igloo grows, it's only $12 per person each month, which is very affordable and reasonable. If nothing else, check out the website just to see their genuinely funny videos about the service. Go to igloosoftware.com/big to start building your Igloo. That's igloosoftware.com/big, B-I-G, as in Big Web Show, to which we now return. Thank you, Igloo. We've got all these advertising things to solve, and we got all these things to create, and you're creating apps right now. There's the Photoshop model of doing that, but with apps and responsive websites, Photoshop is an important tool still in the toolkit, but
it is,
obviously other tools are needed. How do you unlearn a process that you've refined over multiple decades, and how do you start thinking in new ways?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when
that's the question, isn't it? Yeah, that's something that I actually am thinking a lot about these days. We at ClickFarm, we are rebranding at the moment, and part of our rebranding was taking a really hard look at our processes. And one of the first things that I thought of as we're looking at the processes is going into that design phase, because as we are creating so many, basically I can think of only one project going through the shop right now that does not have responsive built into it, and it was because it is going to be used in a specific context, and so it wasn't needed.
It's however, only for the iPad mini or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're doing that, then sure. But it's a consideration that is always going to be looming over our head at this point. And so how do we refine our processes to reflect that and make sure that we're doing the best work we can, the smartest work that we can, and hopefully, of course, you know, smart with insight and so on and so forth, but mostly just not a lot of wasted effort. And so that idea of comping up, here's what your desktop page looks like, here's what it's going to look like on a tablet, here's what it looks like on mobile, so on and so forth. I think we've all kind of as an industry begun to realize that that's not probably the best use of everybody's time. And so we are all pulling out the battle cries of mobile first and design in the browser and different things like style tiles is another thing that people are looking at as a possible solution to the problem.
Yeah. By Samantha Warren, the lovely and talented Samantha Warren's style tiles, which you can find on the internet via Google. Mm-hmm.
at styletile.es. So spell out styletile. Yeah. And so I started kind of looking around and seeing what the best practices are. And so we're really working at kind of refining that process. But then now to go back to your beginning or the end of that question, I've been doing web design almost for 20 years now.
Right.
I started while I was in college playing around with Notepad and putting it up on the university servers. And I'm kind of one of the old farts of the web design industry, or at least in this community. And so how do I get decades worth of knowledge and process, break it down and get it into something that that works for me and that keeps me relevant and viable? And that's a tough thing.
Always in design, always in advertising, you're always becoming obsolete. I don't
True.
Care who you are,
and yep.
I don't care who you are. You're always becoming obsolete, and as you get on in years and experience, you're no longer the cutting edge designer. But hopefully, you're surrounding yourself with people who have, a fresh vision visually, but lack your seasoning. As we like.
Yeah. And I think that's true. I just know that for myself personally, I just want to make sure that in the end, even though I do everything to surround myself with those people who are smarter than I am, and trust me, the more I do things on the internet and the more I meet people, people have always told me I'm a very smart person, but boy, I tell you what, there are a lot of people out there that make me feel really, really dumb. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But for me personally, I just want to make sure that when I open my mouth, that the smarter people around me don't go, wow, why is he leading us? I try to make sure that I stay as unobsolete as I possibly can. But you're always trying to push yourself. Another example I could think of is 10 years ago, the first edition of Designing with Web Standards really pushed my thoughts on how I approached web design and web coding. And so, and that was an unlearning phase for me, but it turned out pretty well, thanks to you, Jeffrey. And
Thank
so
you. It was a learning phase for me too.
Well, yeah, I can imagine, because it really was at the time, it was a shift in how you thought about what you were doing. And so that's kind of what I'm working on now. And so what is that process that for me at the moment? I really do like Samantha Warren's style tiles, and I have adapted that idea. I've used it on two client projects so far, and I would say that's kind of a successful idea to look at. It is, and it's an interesting thing, because it is a huge unlearning process for clients as well, because they, for decades now, also are used to, in the beginnings of a project, having a designer come in. This is what your homepage looks like. This mm-hmm. is option two for what your homepage looks like.
Yeah.
And so when I come in with style tiles, and here's a handful of color swatches, a couple of type treatments, and maybe what a picture would look like if it were a call to action, it's a little tough to get your head around. And so, that has been interesting. It's been an educational process there. Some of the one client, like I said, I've done it with two. One client took to the idea a little easier than the other one did. But that's okay, because it's a learning process for me too. This is brand new. And so it's me trying to figure out how that's going to fit into my repertoire and my new toolbox. And I think that it's definitely something that I'm going to continue doing, because it seems like it's got a lot of possibility in where you can go with it. And then secondly, the other thing that I'm working on doing, which is not necessarily a new thing, but it was a new thing for me, is when I'm doing wireframes, I'm now doing wireframes as live HTML instead of going into OmniGraffle and here's what the wireframe for desktop looks like. Here's what the wireframe for a mobile experience might look like. Now, since we have great frameworks like Twitter Bootstrap, Zurb Foundation, pick your own grid framework, whatever you like, it's really easy to go in and just make gray box models, slap them up on a server and say, okay, so here's how the interactions are going to work without putting in any design to it. Everything is an abstraction. So that is another thing that I've been working on that I think is really effective. But then now we get back to that whole idea of comping things up in Photoshop. So are we doing that still? Some people still are. Some people are saying, no, just start in browser. I am not quite into the design in browser just yet. And so for me, the stopgap, and I'm still using Photoshop to do the things that Photoshop is really, really good for. Right, touching on up photos and so on and so forth. But a lot of the actual UI design that I do these days is in Bohemian Coding Sketch. So, and I have really taken to that product pretty well. It's a nice product. It's easy for people to get into. It's $50 on the App Store. But what I like about it is that, oh, there's a lot of things that I like about it. The grids, you can set it up as a crosshatched grid, or you can set it up as a column grid, as if you were kind of overlaying a Bootstrap grid over the top of it or whatever. So you know that at 940 pixels, each column is 60 pixels wide with a 20 pixel gutter. You set it up, there's big gray bars, and you start to align and design to that. And so that makes that nice and easy. For things like buttons that I know are going to end up being pure code anyway, I can design the buttons the way I want. I can right click on that and say copy CSS attributes, and it gives me fully great, very well rendered CSS3 code that I can then put into my style sheets. And so the design that I've done has already been coded for me. And every once in a while, there's been a little bit of a tweak that I might want to make in code, but for the most part, it does a pretty good job. It does Retina. So since it's basically a vector tool, so it does Retina assets as well as low res assets. So it really kind of does a lot of the interaction pieces, the UI pieces that Photoshop, we've used Photoshop because that's the tool that we had, but it is truly a Photoshop and not necessarily a design tool. And so this seems to be more of what I like using, because it really is made for interaction design from the ground up.
I want to hear more about that.
Okay.
But we are out of time.
All right.
Alas, so we'll have to have you back. Jeremy Fuchsa, I want to thank you. I want to, where should people look for you, other than listening to this podcast, this broadcast, this thing?
Well, you can go to jeremyfuchsa.com, and that's where you can get information about writing and whatever that I'm working on. And then, of course, as you said, then I am also the host of The Shakes on Mule Radio Syndicate. So we are podcasting brethren. And so if you guys are interested in just creative conversation, we do that. So I encourage your listeners to check us out and see if we're for them.
That is fantastic, Jeremy. Thank you. And thank you to our sponsors, Igloo Software and HostGator. This has been Big Web Show 101. See you again soon.